back to St. Andrew Episcopal School's faculty-led podcast, Inspire and Innovate, a podcast for educators. We are somehow in our seventh season of the show, and this time we're shedding some light on teaching these days by taking a look at a series of often unspoken teacher life truths. The joys, the challenges, the absurdity of it all. What's it like teaching as an introvert versus extrovert? Is it possible to teach 80 kids a day and still feel lonely? How does the parent hat intersect with the teacher hat? Honest stories from our faculty at St. Andrew's to you, we present Teacher Truths. Let's get into it.
In July of this year, the New York Times published an op-ed piece that, at least in my corners of the internet, and let's face it, we're all on different internets, was widely mocked. Its title, "Is the Cure to Male Loneliness Out on the Pickleball Court?" To be fair, the article is not that bad. It's mostly the artwork for it that was mocked. If you haven't seen it, well, it's something. The article itself is really just one of many recent pieces of discourse on what U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy has termed, per the title of a May 2023 report, our epidemic of loneliness and isolation. His introduction to that report notes that when he, quote, embarked on a cross-country listening tour, I heard stories from my fellow Americans that surprised me. People began to tell me they felt isolated, invisible, and insignificant, even when they couldn't put their finger on the word lonely. While it's easy to associate this trend with the after effects of the COVID pandemic or with any number of digital technologies, this is not a new conversation. We could go at least as far back as the year 2000 to Robert Putnam's book Bowling Alone, which tracks decades of disengagement from multiple forms of traditional community involvement. Loneliness is perhaps an unexpected topic for a conversation about teachers and their working lives. It's certainly an ironic one, given that teachers spend their days surrounded by people. And yet, as this season of our podcast focuses on teacher truths, aspect of this profession and of teachers' experiences that can go misunderstood or under-discussed, the experience of loneliness, both personal and professional, is one worth talking about. I am Matt Luter. I teach English in the upper school. I am joined for this episode by another member of the team, Jessica Parker Ferris, who is the lower school art teacher. And we are joined by Michelle Portera, who is a teacher in the lower school teaching first grade. And we got started thinking about this, Jessica and I, as we were among the team folks thinking about aspects of teachers' experience that sometimes people are hesitant to talk about or that maybe go under-talked about, right?
I would say so, yes. I mean, would you maybe agree, Michelle?
Yeah, for sure, because like you said, we're around people all the time, but that doesn't mean that we don't get lonely. And it's a different kind of loneliness. I'm sure we'll get into that. But yeah, it's definitely a thing.
I agree, definitely a thing. Go ahead.
Okay, well, if we all want, I will go ahead and just start with some questions that we've kind of put together to just get us reflecting and thinking about each of our experiences working at a school. And one that I have is, how do you sense or experience loneliness in your profession, if you do? And or possibly, you know, how do you sense it or have you sensed it with others among our community?
The first thing that came to my mind when you were reading it just now was not what I thought of earlier as I thought about what we were going to talk about. When you said, how do you sense it in others? And I thought about some of the students that I've sensed it in this year, even though it's first grade, and we normally don't think of, you know, lonely first graders. It happens, and you can tell a lot of times who is lonely, who really just wants to be included, who wants to be seen. And as I reflect on, you know, what it means to be lonely, it doesn't mean all the time that we're walking around sad and, you know, pining away for something, but it has to do with feeling seen, I think. And maybe understood, or at least that other people are trying to understand where you're coming from. So yeah, it's made me really think this year about how I respond to the loneliness that I see in my students. And I have a wonderful assistant, Rachel Rice, and she's very sensitive and aware of other people. And so we've really tried to address that in our classroom this year.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. Did you want to comment on that one at all, Matt?
One thing that came to my mind is I wonder what I wonder how experiences of this might differ among divisions, given that middle school teachers work so closely with a grade level team. You mentioned, Michelle, having someone else in your classroom, would it be fair to guess also working closely with other first grade teachers?
Definitely.
Right?
We have a team of four.
Sure.
And we're definitely in this together. And that I can get into later more about what it means to feel lonely within a team and, mm-hmm. you know, what sort of things can cause that. But overall, yes, I think one good thing that we have as far as our structure at St. Andrews is making sure that no one is alone.
Sure.
So this may be more in line with how you've experienced teaching, I'm not sure, but I've been at the school, St. Andrews, for 13 years, and so when I started, I was not on a co-curricular team or what's considered a kind of special areas team. I was on a grade level team, so I worked in kindergarten for 5 years and as an assistant, and I felt very, very connected, especially mostly, honestly, to my fellow assistants, and I think a lot of times not feeling alone, it's not about physically not being alone, but mentally feeling connected to others. And so, so much of the day, like if there was something frustrating, we could laugh it off together. If there was something one of us felt weak in or strong in, we mm-hmm. could help each other out. So we just felt this great sense of like working together. And transitioning after that into co-curriculars, even though there's a team and we do meet and we do try to collaborate on lessons, there's not that like daily interaction
right.
of like, I helped you out, we laughed this off together, you helped me out. It can feel very siloed in the sense that you're the person who knows what you're teaching and no
right.
one else is teaching exactly what you're teaching. And I've had another person who shared, they said, you know, the year that I taught on co-curricular, because they've changed, but they were like, that was the loneliest year mm-hmm. of my time here so far. And I do think the nature of your role or the nature of your team, as Michelle was saying, depending off if that dynamic is working, mm-hmm. I probably imagine, can really impact if you're getting those daily interactions of connection and
I was also thinking about, and you kind of gestured towards this yourself, about I have a wonderful department, and there's so many things that 9, 10, 11, 12th grade English we are all covering. We're all covering in our own ways citation and research and all of these other core academic skills, but I am the AP English language teacher. I'm the only one doing it. I'm not the only person teaching any American Lit, but I am the person doing that 11th grade American Lit survey. I have had other teaching settings where classes were more broadly shared by more than one faculty member. And so I have missed a little bit that sense of if I am struggling with teaching this text, there is someone down the hall also teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I was wondering with how it varies maybe from division to division. We're all collaborating by nature,
yes.
but certain aspects of that collaboration probably take different forms and emphasize certain skills maybe at the expense of others, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I found that sometimes it can kind of mess with your confidence if you get in your head about it a lot. I used to teach ESL, and I had transitioned from kindergarten to ESL. And, you know, at first the narrative in my head was, wow, yay, I get to do this new thing. I get to know more people in the school and work with everybody. And then when I found myself having to kind of get the classroom teachers on board with what I was doing, I felt like I was having to defend all of my plans and all of the things that I was asking them to do in the name of collaborating and meeting their kids' needs. And I remember if I ever got pushback, it would cause me to doubt myself in my mind and think, oh, you know, there's no way to know if I'm doing this right. There's not another ESL teacher that's doing my specific grade that I can bounce ideas off of. Kind of like what you were saying, Matt. It's like you have to be confident in what you're doing because it's not so easy to get feedback from someone who knows exactly where you're coming from.
Yeah. And part of this also, I wonder if is affected by the nature of a school such as ours, where there's so often this tension or this difficult balance to strike between, well, we have a great deal of freedom in how we shape a curriculum. We are not frequently thinking, at least in the upper school, about sort of state mandated standards. And that means individual classrooms, like there's such opportunity to shape what you're doing. It also can be a little isolating if you are doing, if it feels at least like you're doing so in kind of a vacuum.
I think that's interesting that probably leads to like a whole nother podcast episode, thinking about how like the things that we're teaching our children, which is like choice and how much choice is right. And then thinking of it in our own aspects as the teacher, I've written lots of my own thoughts on this, but I think they kind of are going to jump back and forth. So I think one of the next questions is if you've felt lonely, and then do you think it was related to a personal situation or your personal role in the community? And I think I was sharing that, you know, in kinder, especially those fellow assistants, like just those daily interactions of helping one another, I feel like that helps one. There's that sense of empathy, but that sense of connection and being helpful or being helped so that you don't feel, you know, like, oh, I'm doing this wrong. Instead, you feel completely supported and bring you together. So did you want to use that as an opportunity to talk about a time when, even though you were on a grade level, it felt hard to feel connected and not feel kind of on your own?
Definitely. I can think back to a little over 2 years ago when I was new here, and of course I knew that there was a big learning curve. I knew I'm the new girl, but I so remember thinking, wow, these people have it all together, and I know that I'm a good teacher, but I don't know how to be that here yet. And everyone was so helpful, but when you're not performing the way that you know you can perform, or if you're dealing with something new, It is the most lonely feeling when you kind of think like, okay, that person made this beautiful spreadsheet and I'm over here with my like chicken scratch notes and, you know, accepting our differences like that, but not judging ourselves against one another, if that makes any sense. Like, yeah. Comparing and not keeping in mind that different people have different strengths. I think about that end of the year checklist when we're checking off like things you've turned in, things that you've signed off on. Every year, I'm listening to my teammates talk about what they're going to get done next, or, you know, have you done this? Have you done that? And I'll start thinking, oh no, they've all done way more than I have. But then I'll go further down the list and be like, well, no, because I've already done the last five things and they haven't gotten to that yet. And so, you know, it's like some of our loneliness is of our own making, just in our thoughts and knowing how to like control where our mind goes, and comparing ourselves when we might not be on the top of our game. No one's on the top all the time. So
I also was thinking some in response to your initial question, Jessica, about just the experience of, to backtrack maybe a second to sort of how we introduced this, the irony of being around people all day and yet feeling a little isolated or a little bit as if, how it manifests for me sometimes is the being around people in a way that sort of can sap energy without like actually refreshing or revitalizing mm-hmm. that energy. I like working with teenagers. I think anybody who is in education as a career likes working with the age group that they do. And yet there certainly are days when I have knocked on a colleague's door during their free period to just say, I need to talk with an adult mm-hmm. for 5 or 10 minutes.
I've said that many times. Yeah,
yes. Sure. Absolutely.
Sure. And so, you know, I am not the most introverted teacher, but I am more so than many. And so oftentimes, like, just that sense of like what I most need right now is to sit in a relatively quiet room and have a conversation with one other grown up mm-hmm. is like the best thing that can ameliorate some of this, that can actually sort of make things feel ironically a little less lonely after I've been spending a whole, you know, couple of hours with a room full of people.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And just speaking about the, you know, maybe extroverted, introverted spectrum, I'm someone who self-identifies as probably more introverted. I'm someone who grew up homeschooled, living in the middle of the woods. So very much so not surrounded by a large gathering of people on a daily basis for, you know, years. And everyone, or a lot of people, know at the South Campus, I'm often like, if I have 3 to 5 minutes before my class comes, I usually try to wait for my class so I can set those expectations of behavior anyway. But I will try to find, is there another adult that I can literally talk to for just 2 minutes mm-hmm. for that connection? So yes, we get nourished by our students in some ways, and we get excited about what they're doing. But at the same time, there is this need, I think, for most of us, that you still need that nourishment from those peer or yeah. other adult interactions, whether it's just a moment of, yeah, I'm feeling that same way, or just a normal conversation of, hey, what did you do Saturday?
Right.
I think we all are feeling, whatever our levels are, we need those moments of connection somehow built into our daily schedules, rather than, oh gosh, I got to go ahead and just work through lunch. And I've noticed for me personally, even if it's like 5 minutes, okay, I've got this set up. I'm going to go like hang out at this table for 5 minutes with the other grownups. And I get something from that I needed.
And I think that's so great, Jessica, that you're so intentional with your time like that. I think that's a really good strategy for keeping loneliness at bay, is just knowing what you need and going ahead and planning on opportunities to get that need met, just catching a few minutes. I'll have to say, I've worked in a place before where it was frowned upon for teachers to talk in the hallways. Like, you could say hello, but if you stopped and chatted, you would probably get reprimanded for that later on. And, you know, we would kind of, you know, teachers would pass each other in the hall and like really say, oh, can't stop and talk. You know, we would remind each other of that. And it was terrible. It was awful for morale. I'm sure it was great for productivity, but, you know, morale, no, you know, it just made it miserable. And I'm so thankful that, you know, there's no one policing teacher togetherness. As a matter of fact, I love that it's encouraged, because that's what we need, that energy exchange that keeps us going and keeps us, you know, paying attention.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I have notes all over the place, and now I'm just going to, like, jump through. Do you feel that loneliness is something systemic about today's world and culture? Do you feel it's something that spans beyond just our teaching role? Matt, I feel like you probably have some thoughts on this.
I don't know that I have terribly profound ones, other than that I'm aware of how much it's being discussed. And I mentioned in the intro, understandably, a whole lot of the recent discussion of this does point to the pandemic as central to all of this. I think about the really difficult 2020 to 21 school year when when I ate lunch by myself, I think pretty nearly every day of that school year, because we were trying to do as much of that as possible outside here. Like there were practical reasons why certain forms of togetherness were less viable. And I know a lot of the discussion of just sort of at a macro level, a national level, a cultural level, points to ways that, 3 years on, we're still sort of in correction mode there, right? I think that is one. And obviously the other thing that keeps getting pointed to in terms of causes or in terms of manifestations, and that's the hard question, is this the cause or the effect, is a whole lot of digital tech. Is the smartphone, is loads of different social media stuff. I know one of the big questions about tech in these discussions is it the cause or the effect of a lot of the loneliness that things like the Surgeon General's report point to? Are people turning to a lot of online social spaces because of something they are lacking in their physical reality, or is the sort of time spent there kind of altering their physical reality? I don't know that I have a good, clear, concise answer to that, but gosh, it certainly seems like it's a way bigger, more widespread thing than just any one school. And certainly, I mean, you already mentioned Michelle seeing this with first graders, mm-hmm. which just saddens me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I see ways that I suspect it manifests with older students too. But definitely does seem like a broader thing for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have thoughts?
I was just thinking as a mom, I was playing around with the question of, we're more connected than ever, so why are we disconnected? And I feel like the question is, are we connecting with the right people or the right things or connecting with the right intent? I think about the days when I'm overwhelmed from work, and so I come home and I just want to sit and scroll and just stare into the, into space and just kind of decompress. And maybe my son wants me to go outside and throw the football or something, and I just don't have it. And he sees me staring at my phone, and maybe he mistakes that as, well, mom's just not wanting to be with me right now, and really I'm just kind of taking a moment. I don't know. I think it's complicated like that on trying to be more intentional with where is my attention being focused. Because if I'm just on Instagram searching around, the end result of that might be that I feel less worthy, or I feel bad about myself because my life is not looking like whatever the world says it's supposed to look like. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of that, did I just invest my time in something that was connective and positive for myself, or did I just miss an opportunity to connect in real life?
And choose something that when I think about it is not going to make me feel better.
Yeah.
I mean, it will, and those things are addictive,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, and some of what we know more and more of in the last couple of years about those technologies and the algorithms and such, like, that's a feature and not a bug, it seems.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, and I don't have like an end goal of mentioning it, but just listening to you talk and just thinking, you know, we can be surrounded by others or surrounded by our students, or we have these teams and we're all working towards the same goal. So in that sense, like, we might be connected through the knowledge of this thing or, you know, this goal or objective we're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. But that is still different than the sense of feeling connected to each of these individuals, each of these community members.
Do you think that has to do with the level of vulnerability that we're comfortable with? Some people are very surfacey. Some people you can connect with right away, and they're an open book and, you know, offer a lot of ways to connect as far as just, you know, here's what I'm struggling with or here's what I'm thinking. Some people are more closed off.
Absolutely. And, I mean, yeah. I think it's so many layers, and I think we might start talking about more of them as we get towards the end. But yes, absolutely. Being vulnerable is hard. So yes, absolutely. I think that's definitely one way in which that if we can be more vulnerable. I also had mentioned I've had a big shift in my feeling connected to others this year from just last year. And I know I'm not trying to complain, because I know we can have a lot of these similar issues that come up again and again, but just a tiny change even in someone's schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm teaching pretty much mostly the same amount of classes as I was last year, or hours, but just the schedule has shifted, like when the classes actually happen. And that gives me like some breathing room. So for example, one thing is my classes used to start a little earlier, my first block, and a lot of times Little Chapel on Fridays would not even be finished. So everything is set in motion to be rushing, right? And so by the time the students hurry and walk and try to race over there, they're technically 5, 7 or a few minutes late. So there's definitely no time to kind of feel like you just had this moment of connected in the gym. There was no time to, like, if I saw a parent, you know, this year I've had the opportunity to reach out to some parents just in a few moments to say, hey, this is what your kid's been doing, and them showing so much gratitude and joy, and it leading to, you know, more moments. Being able to be connected with a few faculty members, just even as they're desetting, you know, from chapel service, just those few moments have really helped me have the opportunity to feel far more connected this year. And it was just a very simple change.
So along those lines, and maybe a good place to move toward wrapping up is what has been successful. What strategies, what solutions, even kind of limited ones, have we found useful in addressing the experience of loneliness on the job as a teacher? I feel like we've already kind of hit on a few, right? Prioritizing connection during the day, whether it's lunchtime, whether it's I need to talk with an adult for 5 minutes. One thing that came to my mind is I value my colleagues a great deal, and yet it is important for me to have circles of friends that have no connection to my work. and that sort of knowing that I have things outside of my work life that are feeding me, that are fulfilling me, absolutely puts me in a position, I feel like, where when I am on the clock, I'm more effective, I think. Mm-hmm. I compare the last couple of years to when I first moved back to Jackson in 2016 to work here, and I was moving to a city I was already familiar with. But it still took time to sort of build those connections within town that I know are beneficial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else are y'all?
Some of the things I thought of, number one was taking advantage of our PLCs. I know Jessica and I had a wonderful experience with Haley Allen's PLC last year because it was such a place of vulnerability and just talking and bringing your whole self and feeling like, wow, I'm at work and I am also talking about these personal things with these people that I work with and it's okay.
What was the topic of that PLC?
What was it even called, Jessica?
It was called, I think it was called Living Compass. And so it, like at first I didn't even know if it made sense for me to be in there because mm-hmm. I'm not someone who's Episcopal or traditionally religious. And so, but it was wonderful. And that was actually one of the things that I had listed on my notes as well of just having, it was such a small group and it was an opportunity for us to kind of really reflect on ourselves and like areas of our lives that we felt like, as I think Haley may have said, is watering the grass, like what needed nourishment. And so that was the whole reason that I had signed up for her PLC was because I thought, I personally feel like I'm drained. I don't have anything else to give or maybe more energy to take on. These are the new skills you need to build to be a better teacher. I felt I need my cup filled. I need to feel nourished and I need to feel connected. And I do think, you know, so much of our day, loving our students, but giving of our students, as you say, can be very draining rather than feeling always nourishing. And so that was what I had needed. And I think that was a beautiful place for us to have calm, for us to connect and be vulnerable, you know, for us to share those vulnerabilities where you maybe feel like, oh, I'm not doing a good job in this, or it just felt great to not feel isolated in thought, because sometimes I do think that we can be in the space together, but you might not feel that sense of belonging in everything because we are unique, we are different, we do have different thoughts about reality or life or values, and so being in a small space where we could just share and have that sense of trust with one another and feel supported by one another was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and so when I think about this year's PLCs, you know, we've moved on to other ones, and I'm in one now that's arts integration, and it's a small group of people. And I tried to look at it as, well, okay, I know we're not going to be in here meditating together, but what an opportunity to connect with people that I wouldn't get to connect with otherwise. So taking, you know, meetings and these gatherings that we have for different purposes and just looking at them as chances for connection.
Absolutely. So I'm teaching one this year because Julie had asked me. And so, but I had told her, I was like, the only way I'm can offer one is if it is like strictly like joy based, nourishment based, like studio time, like I would do with my students so that we can be nourishing each other. And so, yeah, similar thoughts there.
Mm-hmm. Another thing was simply having access to a counselor or a chaplain. That was a big deal for me when I came here. I really felt that even if I came overwhelmed with like personal stuff or if I was carrying something that felt heavy, I knew I could go talk to certain people and just get it out there and move on and be better for the rest of my day. And not everyone that is a teacher in other places has that. I mean, a lot of times the counselor is just for the students. And so that felt like such a privilege to have and to have people, you know, to walk through things with if needed so that you don't feel lonely when you're carrying something heavy.
What do we feel St. Andrews does really well to help folks feel connected? And maybe where is there some room for growth?
I think that we do well with our celebrations. Like we celebrate a lot of things and we have get-togethers just for fun sometimes. And the fact that our school makes that a priority is really a good step in that direction of connection.
That was one of the ones that I wrote down,
too. Okay, we're like-minded.
Like-minded. I wrote the word celebrate really big. I had recently read or heard on a podcast talking about how, like, when you're trying something hard, if you don't take time to celebrate with others, instead of, like, thinking, oh, I did such a great job, you'll actually associate the stress and the long hours and these negative things. And so I do think we do a great job, at least especially at the lower school, of celebrating, whether it's just, okay, we all, like, made it through this first quarter together.
Yeah.
You know, let's take a Wednesday to, like, let each other chat and kind of catch up and just be humans for a moment.
Yes, yes.
So yes, absolutely.
Also, I really value those grade level meetings where it's like odds up, evens, or whatever it's called, where you get to meet with different grades. Like, we get to meet with kindergarten and second grade at different times and make sure that we understand what it looks like a level below us and a level above us, and so that we can make it flow. But also, it just really reiterates that we're all on the same team, and that feels really good and really connected. And I'm sure that translates into the way that we teach and the way that parents feel about what we do. That's been really valuable.
I'd add the mentor program to this list.
Yes, yeah.
100%.
Not just that it exists, not just that we have it, but that one of its sort of value sets, for lack of a better word, is that it is about not requiring that a new faculty member show up and suddenly do everything just like their predecessor or just like the people whose department or team they're joining, but instead that it is built around what are the things that you do really well that you bring to the table, and how can we highlight those? How can we integrate those into the life of the school? And the fact that it's guided by how can we best bring to the table the things that this person is good at, and connect them into the existing life of the school as a result.
Yes, I love that it's so purposeful, like it's like intentional. So hopefully you don't have to worry about anyone falling through the cracks. And I know we have a lot of folks that might feel more connected to a different coworker, but to just know that we've got somebody here for each of you, like you're all being thought of. How can we support you? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One other thing I had was just Sunshine. I don't know if that's like a whole school thing or if that's a lower school thing, but at the South Campus, at least, we have Sunshine, which is just where kind of there's a group of people that we all try to, they try to help check in on you if something's going poorly, or you have a lot of things going on in your family, whatever it may be. I went for a long time where, you know, I kind of never saw like the fruits of the Sunshine personally. And then a few years ago had a really, you know, a lot of different events, and I was at home for several weeks just because of personal things. And I have probably never felt more connected, just because so many people were checking in on me, calling me, texting me. They bring you food if you need it. And so shout out to Reverend Haley and Annie and all of the folks who really just make sure they're reaching out to others when there's a need.
Mm-hmm. Here's my public service announcement. I've been thinking about this a lot. If you see someone that you don't normally see during your day, speak to them. At least say hello. At least look them in the eyes. That is so hard for many people, myself included. But I kind of had this experience this year where I started seeing some new faces, and it was foundation's staff that just I had never interacted with before. And we began to say hello to each other. And one day, one of the sweet ladies came up to me and said, "Thank you so much for speaking to me. It changes my day when I come in here and I feel seen, because I don't work in this lower school building. I work in that building over there. But it means so much that you look up and say hello." And I just thought, wow, what would I feel like if that was my experience every day? When you feel like the outsider, you work here, you work just as hard as everyone else, but you feel like an outsider because of the location of the building that you work in. So that is so important to connect and just acknowledge one another's existence.
I love that. I think that's so wonderful that you're doing that.
She caught me on a good day. Wow. I'm trying to be better at that. But yes, that is a challenge for all of us. It would make such a difference. It does make a difference.
The only thing I was going to add to that was just those were some of the things I had written about. Just I think for us to continue to grow as a school, I had written down reflecting on our language. Openness with our perception, you know, of others that may be different. And then you just hit really hard on two of them, which was awareness and empathy. And if you're really going that extra mile to be aware of your surroundings, being aware of the people walking next to you and saying hi, and that can build so much more empathy. And I think that's one of our first steps to always evolving our ability to connect with our community.
Definitely. And one thing to add to that, if someone doesn't watch their language, if someone rubs you the wrong way, even in the most subtle way, it's easy to just go away and think all these things in your head about how negative that was. But what if we got to a place with each other where we could talk things out and like, get curious and say, like, what did you mean by that? To care enough to clear the air when it needs to be cleared, because sometimes things become bigger than they really need to be, and it does affect your interactions with people and it affects the way that you feel during the day. So that's been another thing that I've tried to make myself more aware of, is just, you know, did you speak up when that happened? Because if it happens and you let time go by, you kind of just give up the right to address that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's such a good opportunity for connection. So many times when you have hard conversations with people, you come out more connected than before. Mm-hmm. And so,
And I do think the more that we are doing what you had said of like being aware of one another, growing in our empathy, that we can have also some of those harder conversations sometimes, because I know I can talk to Michelle because I know Michelle,
is a safe person.
Yeah, safe place and connected and we get each other. Yeah, we're connected. So I know
that you won't be misunderstood.
I won't be misunderstood. Yeah. Like I could totally have this conversation with her because we've made that connection.
Thank you so much, Michelle, for joining Jessica and me. And while I doubt we have solved in any permanent fashion in the last 30-something minutes any of the difficulties that come with the experience of loneliness within a teaching setting. I think one thing that resonates with me that you mentioned, Michelle, is just the raising people's awareness of like the fact that that is a real one of these, to go back to the theme of the podcast for the season, Teacher Truths, that it is one of these things that is out there, that is many teachers' lived experience, and is something that maybe goes under-discussed or under-acknowledged. And so talking about it, being open about it, being empathetic about it, to return to some key thoughts that y'all wrapped up with as well, all good things, to value, to highlight as we think through this.
I think, you know, us talking today was not that we have a solution, that we've like got loneliness figured out. But like you were saying, Matt, that just acknowledging that we as educators are not alone in our loneliness. This is often a shared experience. And just by verbalizing that and talking about that together in the smallest step can bring us together.
Yeah.